Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today we have an incredible real leader who I've had the joy of getting to know actually before we started recording today. I kind of stalked him on LinkedIn when I saw the work that he was doing. So, Tim Gallus, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Shauna. Really excited to talk about lots of my favorite topics.
Yeah, absolutely. So, folks, I will tell you, I saw Tim posting content related to the Whole Brand Project. He is the Chief Idea Officer for Barclay Agency and also the director of the Whole Brand Project. And the way I saw the content coming across, it just really took me in and it felt so authentic. So I started commenting, and then I messaged him and I was like, "Will you please come on the show?" And I have to say, Tim, I was so honored because all the work that you're doing, and I mean, I said the roles that you have, but you're also an author and all sorts of stuff. So so if I would love for you to sort of set the foundation for this by letting people know, tell us more about Barclay, your role, and the whole brand project, of course.
I'll try to give you the quick version. I came to Barclay after a number, a lot of years working in agencies. And I think in different agency settings, I was always kind of trying to invent a little bit of a different model. And over the years right before I got to Barclay, I'd been inventing a few little things that just felt more right for where brands were going in the world. And so when I came to Barclay, one of the things that I really wanted to do and Barclay really wanted to do was really just start to see the world of brands in a different way. So fast forward, we just started really not behaving like a traditional agency, which was really Barclay's bread and butter, but we really started looking at what brands really needed to do. And we started to do research. Some of the earliest research we did was a partnership with Boston Consulting on millennials. And believe it or not, at that time, nobody had done research on millennials and marketing. So we really started that. And that whet our appetite really for doing proactive research, which is really what the Whole Brand Project is all about. And it really was about digging into what brands really need to do. And sometimes that was advertising, sometimes that was marketing, but it tended to be a lot of different things. So our model has really evolved to reflect the way brands really succeed and the way brands really grow. And that's really why we call it the whole brand model. And the Whole Brand Project is really our proactive laboratory, if you will. It's where we spend our money and our time to look at where the world of brands are going while we're building brands at the same time. And again, I think, as you know, being in the business, one of the hardest things to do is be proactive in our world. We're usually really great at being reactive, but the whole brand project is much more about proactive. And that's what I love about it.
That's awesome. And so talk a bit about the purpose nature of it and the I'll call it good work, air quotes good for people who aren't watching as I'm doing that, which also ties into you being a certified B Corp. So I just think that's such a core part of this that I would love for you to share with the audience.
Yeah, it's incredibly important to the idea of being a whole brand. Whole brand is not synonymous for being a great brand. It really is a definition that defines a brand as not only a brand that sees everything they do as the brand and has a core idea that is meant to be purpose, but really measures their success not just by profit and the performance of the organization, but by the impact they have on the world. And so for us, we have capabilities in sustainability, we have capabilities in purpose, and also internal culture, which is great. And again, as we modeled our business after the way brands were really growing, that was really important. But then we decided, well, to really prove our idea and to really prove that we're a whole brand as an entity ourselves, the B Corp's certification was sort of that icing on the cake that's really important for us. And it holds us accountable. And we obviously have to prove it and live up to it every few years. And we love it because it's also given us a relationship with a lot of other like-minded brands and the B Lab in general. But to me, when we went down that path, it really solidified the whole brand model, because it, you know, first and foremost, it's not just about marketing. Marketing is a big part of what we do, but we do a lot of other things, and we look at everything on a spectrum. I do this a lot. I do a spectrum from marketing ideas to business ideas. And on the far left side of that business idea is sustainability. And on the far right of that marketing idea is advertising. So we do all of that and everything in between. And having that B Corp certification was mandatory to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love how you're truly walking the talk. And I think that, you know, that might sound like an obvious statement, but I, like you said, like I've been in the industry, I'm in the industry. And so there's so many companies out there, whether it's an agency or a brand, that's not actually doing that. So I appreciate it from the perspective of your, you know, those are the brands that you're working with and that's what you're talking about. You hold yourself to those standards.
It's, you know, it's, I think it's one of the things that attracted me to Barclay. There was a really powerful culture when I got here, which I really liked. And I think that we've used the independent nature of our company to fuel us. We invest in a lot of the right things. And, you know, we've always said as a group that we really want to be able to be, you know, most agencies don't think of themselves as brands. Most design companies maybe design a little bit more than traditional agencies or strategy firms, but whatever we are, and we're kind of all the above, we wanted to make sure that we were practicing what we preach. And I really like that. I mean, it really, we think we're a bit of an experiment, and we want those questions. Well, you're telling us to do this. You're telling us to do that. Well, do you guys do that as an organization? And we want to say, yes, we do. Yes, we do. And I think that if more agencies would do that, you know, they would have a point of view and they would stand for something more than, you know, what will get us to the next job. And I think that that's always been a big, important part of what we're doing. And we're doubling down on that. We haven't stopped. We've invested in all of that, especially since we became a B Corp. I do love that. It's not easy and we're not perfect by any means, but it's definitely in our culture.
Yeah. I mean, it fits so much what I was saying to you earlier about my personal passion and the brand of SLG Impact is all about evolving brands and people. So it sounds to me like you're saying that you're on that evolution track. You're not perfect. You're going to continue to evolve as a B Corp. You're going to continue to evolve your own brand. I think that actually helps a lot with the clients, because in the conversation, it's less of like telling people you do this and I'm perfect or whatever. You could actually say like, gosh, we've gone through this and I understand your pain points. And I think it just helps, one, from an empathy standpoint, but also you're able to provide real examples and how you got to real solutions.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because we, you know, as you're in this space, you know, there's just these sort of terrible debates happening right now around purpose and around sustainability and around ESG. And they're so harmful. They're not helpful. And I always say, you know, don't let the marketing industrial complex kill purpose. Purpose is not a marketing idea. Sustainability is obviously far from a marketing idea. These are business ideas. These are culture ideas and hopefully innovation ideas. But I love brands. And, you know, and I think some of the brands that we hold up, there's something about them that we don't say often enough, is the fact that they don't have it all figured out, but they have let you know where they're going and what their ambition is, and they stay the course. So, you know, obviously Patagonia has done that. Here's our business model. We are in business to save the planet. Now, everybody knows that they're going there. So every time they do even the smallest thing, I always say when Patagonia sneezes, they get a press release, because everybody knows what they're trying to do. And but on a maybe in a more more pragmatic level, even a brand like Chipotle, you know, we're here to make food that's fast be good. And, you know, that's not their language, but everybody has sort of known they're on that path and they're not perfect, but you know that's the path that they're on. And so you stay with them. And I think there's something about that when brands are looking at purpose and sustainability and initiatives, they don't have to have it all figured out, but they have to lock in on where they're going and stay the course. And I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. I've always thought of it where the marketing comes in is when you have a brand like that, where people have such affinity for that brand. I always think about it as actually like passion point marketing. So the marketing comes in where you're actually engaging and mobilizing that audience to really, I was going to think, like, it sounds cheesy, but like drink the Kool-Aid, right? Because they're so excited about it. And so they're engaging and they're furthering the effort. So that's what in my mind, where to your point, you have to have that as like part of the fabric of the brand itself in order for that audience to feel it's authentic and to truly connect with it. But that's where I feel like you can turn that passion point marketing on and really make a difference.
Yeah. And I think we just look at the brand and we just say, let's think about all these special moments you create in experience and design and marketing. And, you know, a lot of times we just say brand your way, let people know the way of your brand. And Chipotle is really good at that. And those passion points, as you call them, give people the script, let them know what to share, be very intentional about that. That's where design plays a role in. Because if you don't, you're not going to have the equity that you want. And if those, passion points are real and they're really true to the brand, they're going to be so much more powerful. And I think, one of my favorite stories, like Chipotle, one of my favorite things that they do is the sign that they use when they run out of one of their proteins. And it's just simple. They just put that sign and say, you can't order this today because we couldn't get it. We couldn't find we couldn't source something that was up to our standards. And that's just a simple little sign, but it's their whole brand in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You can't have that big ass burrito with pork because we couldn't get the pork that would fit for that big ass burrito.
It's so true. It truly is. It's an expression of your standards and living up to them every day. And I mean, you talked earlier about the studies that you've done with millennials. And I think that, in my opinion, and I haven't done the studies, so you'll have to correct me, but millennials, I think, started pushing that curve more of actually like holding brands accountable for what they were saying and what they were doing. But now the audience, the Gen Zs and whatever they're called after Gen Zs, now it's like demanded, I think, from brands. And like, I think that those generations are really more than ever making decisions on, what brands they like, what brands are going to engage with and wear on their clothes and that kind of thing based on what the brand stands for.
A lot of times I just think I don't know how conscious people are about it. But right. I do know, sometimes I think a brand, depending on the type of brand, there's lots of different brands and lots of different reasons for brands. But when we're talking about brands and helping them, I always think of that alibi. Sometimes the worst alibi is when you ask someone, what kind of car do you drive? And the alibi is how they answer that question. How do they defend their choice of cars? And cars are also very important. But once those words start coming out of their mouth, it's very important because that's their alibi. And the other way I like to think about it is, people don't really necessarily want to be a part of a brand story. But if you can be a part of their story and the brand is in there somewhere, that's where the word of mouth comes in. That's where the endorsements come in. But that's really powerful. So when you think about those brands like Chipotle and Patagonia, the brands that have really great alibis, that really is when they're helping you have a better story. You're not helping them have a better story. And that's really powerful. So what can we do to help them have a better story? And that's where we look at that whole brand. Sometimes that's a sustainability story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a design story. Sometimes it's a content story. But you got to find those stories. Yeah. You've got to mine for those stories across the whole brand. They're not just in one place.
Right. So We've referenced the whole brand and the project, and so again, I found you through what you put out into the world from 2022. So, are there any key takeaways as people are hearing this? And I will link to it when I post this so that more people can have access to it. But I'm hoping that the listeners can get some more tangible, whether it's takeaways or any elements of it that you can share to really help people understand, again, like your findings and what's in it.
No, it's important. So we've had this model, the whole brand model, and 3 years ago we started the whole brand study. So we really wanted to prove the model out. So every year we do consumer surveys, which is, for us and for the model, it's a very difficult model, but that's really the way that we have to start. And we've talked to, I think at this point, over 15,000 people. So we look at different categories and different brands, and through that study, we basically measure their perception on the whole brand. So we get at design and experience, we get at marketing and communications, we get at purpose and sustainability through that consumer survey. And again, it's perception. But what we find is the brands that score highest in our study, and we call that the whole brand index, the brands that score in the top 20% of that are profoundly different than the rest of the brands. They command a price premium. They're shared twice as much. 60% of people are willing to pay more for those brands, and their impact on the world is greater. So there's a huge difference between those brands and the rest of the brands. And so those brands that score highest, they're basically performing as whole brands. They're using their brand and their brand foundation to drive everything they do, not just some of the things that they do. And it really comes through. And so it really proves the profit piece of it. Over the last 3 years, those brands are outperforming the S&P 500 by upwards to 30 to 40%. So just on the market value of those brands, it's much higher. But as I say, profit is obviously for many organizations, if not all, the way in. But what we love about them is that they can recruit better, they retain talent more, and they're just built for the world that we're facing. And whether the data proves it or not, these are going to be the brands that have a more positive impact on the world. And so the data is in there, it's pretty profound. And again, we love it because it just shows the power of the model. If you behave holistically, it pays dividends in many, many ways.
Yeah. I actually want to ask you, when I was doing some, again, like my rabbit holing into your brand, your company and the work that you've been doing, one of the things I came up with that I'm just reading because I made sure to make a note is that you serve a modern consumer and employees. And I think that kind of ties into what you were just talking about. So tell us what you mean by that. How do you define that?
It's a great, we put that word modern and in front of consumers and employees. And you can sort of think of that as stakeholders as well, as you think about that. But the employees and the consumers might be the ends of the spectrum. But modern really is that term for us of we want to design brands not for the lowest common denominator. We really, it's a little bit different than a design philosophy where they might say, well, let's design for the lowest common denominator, but let's look at the high user as well. We want to look for what we call the true believer, someone that is actually asking more of the brand, but not just and participates with the brand beyond marketing. And so that's what we look at. We want that to apply to consumers and employees. We want people to participate with the brand. So a lot of times when we think of consumer, we just use that word. Are they consuming the brand? Are they taking it in? Are they using it? And we don't see consumer as a bad word. And so when we design for that true believer, someone that is taking the brand in and understanding it more than someone else, it kind of holds us to a higher order. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like a band writing their music for their best fans.
Yeah.
It holds them to their, you know, and they'll say, well, how do you let other people in? Well, as soon as they do that, all of a sudden they forget what's true about them and what is unique about them. And we think brands are sort of the same. If they design for everybody, then they're not really for anybody. And so modern consumers ask more, modern employees ask more, and that's the way we design brands.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. So actually, I meant to ask you this earlier. You've talked a lot about, like, and thank you, that services, we have an understanding of what you do and how you focus. For people who are listening and maybe they're interested for their own brand or they know of a brand, what can you give us an idea of maybe what kinds of brands you do work with? I mean, aside from saying the whole brand,
yeah.
Or whether it's names or anything so that people can get an idea, like, do I fit or does someone else's brand fit?
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, we work with all sorts of brands, and I think with our model too, it might help because we do a lot of agency of record work, a lot of, you know, where we'll be the creative and strategic partner. A lot of times the outcome of that will be marketing and advertising, but we also do a lot of project work. And we have a lot of organic growth with the brands that we have, and that organic growth usually happens across that spectrum. So sustainability, purpose, culture, design, a lot of things that we weren't necessarily hired to do. But typically we get brought in, I would say more often than not, across the agency of record type brands or project work where invention and or transformation are needing to happen. So sometimes, you know, we're building brands from scratch. You know, we've built healthcare models. We've built a content media model with Hearst. We've built a healthcare model with Blue Cross from scratch, designing the business model, designing the experience, designing the brand foundation. We're currently doing one in Arizona. But then when we work with on the agency of record side, a lot of times, I would say it's a brand that possibly has lost their way.
Oh.
And a lot of times they're looking to get back on course. And so many times we're not there to try to reinvent them. More than anything, we're looking to see what is unique and special that you already have, because that's much easier to do.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they're so, you know, as you know, they're so close to it that they don't see it. And so we've recently, you know, over the past few years, we're doing that and have done that with Planet Fitness, with Dairy Queen, with Motel 6, which has been really interesting. And those are brands where they have equity, but they're challenged. They're in very challenging categories, as you can imagine. But we're basically going in and saying, okay, what is unique and what is special and how can we bring that out? And then spread that across the whole brand is the idea. But a lot of times they're looking to, and they love our model, but they're looking for some kind of transformation and or innovation.
Yeah. I think this has been such a great point to emphasize, because when we were talking earlier, we referenced Chipotle and Patagonia, and when you just reference the brands of Dairy Queen and Planet Fitness, and I'm blanking on the other one that you mentioned.
Motel 6.
I think that you get a different sense, right? So I think most people think of Patagonia and Chipotle as, again, air quotes, good brands, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's so great for people who are listening to this, is like, you're looking, a lot of the brands that you're working with, they're not there yet, and they have a element of that, but they're also willing to and have awareness of that need for transformation. And I think, again, like that's a special kind of a client versus someone that's just, I need a new campaign. And not that one's good or bad. I mean, you know what I mean by good or bad.
Yeah.
But again, it's just a very different. So again, people who are hearing this, if you're thinking that you or someone else you know, these are almost like really good filters to be paying attention to. if you wanted to, if this conversation is, you know, if it's interesting to you and it sounds like something that would be fitting, there are important filters that you need to kind of go by.
Yeah, no, you made a great point there, because we have a very ambitious model, and many times, you know, it's not as if we walk into, you know, a traditional agency pitch setting and they say, well, give us the whole brand. It doesn't work like that. It really is a process that we hold on tight to. We present the same way every time. We don't, even if someone says we want a content campaign, not even a bigger, you know, marketing campaign, sometimes it's just content. We still use our model and our belief system. Haribo is a great one. Haribo is one of our clients, and it's pretty much a social content client. But we still walk in with our model and we use our same sensibility, because there's a way that a whole brand does content and there's a way that other brands do content, and they're not the same. But I think it's really interesting, because sometimes I do think as a filter for us, we love ambitious brands. We love ambitious marketing departments. And if I was to say anything to CMOs or marketing departments, you should have the keys to that consumer knowledge. And you should have the keys to the brand, maybe more than anybody in the organization. So use that to take that consumer knowledge and that brand knowledge and spread it across the entire organization. Don't just keep it in the marketing department. So we love ambitious CMOs. We love ambitious marketing departments, where we really do probably, you know, come to some odds is when there is such a discreet ask for a campaign. We do it, and we do it really well, but we always have our eye on the, on how that's going to connect to other things that you do in the organization. And we're very clear about that. It's not a growth strategy. It's just being a good partner.
When you were just saying that, I got this sense of the intentionality of what you do. Again, if someone is asking you for a content campaign, you're going to use the approach and stay true to that. And the intention in it is actually helping them continue to evolve as a brand, continue to evolve on their impact journey, which is a lot different than the intention of delivering a great campaign and moving product.
They can all, you know, I think they can all work together. Right. I think that, and I guess, you know, Shauna, some of the difference for me is just difference between short-term impact and long-term. And I love the idea of doing a great short-term impact campaign that builds equity. Right. What I don't love is a short-term impact that you have to reinvent the wheel 12 times a year. It's not about the energy and the effort that goes into it, but you're not really building any equity.
Right.
So a great way to think about it is bring that intention into any type of project. I always say, you know, first thing you do, and this is just a mantra at Barclay, question the brief. You know, first thing you do, is this the right ask? Question it, make sure we're doing the right thing. Okay, let's assume that we are after we question it. Let's say we are. And the second thing is, while we're at it, can we do something bigger? While we're spending the next 6 weeks, 6 months on this, can we do more with it? And sometimes that more is, how does this content campaign lead to advertising, or how does this content campaign lead to design, or how might this content campaign actually inspire a new product in innovation? Yeah. And if you just ask those questions, honestly, I would say 7 times out of 10, other ideas just start popping up, which is great.
Right. You know? Right. And again, through that whole lens of the whole brand, I think, again, it's a differentiator, I think it sounds like. So, I mean, that's just what I'm taking away. And when I say a differentiator, again, like you said, it's not that it's mutually exclusive. Like, again, you can have both happen the short and long at the same time. But again, when you're coming at it, sounds like when you're coming at it from the way you do, again, it's for that, it's always with that longer term approach, or longer term outcome as the sort of North Star.
Yeah. And I think it's longer term, but it's also, as you said, it's the intention. And I think when you get pigeonholed into marketing and when you get pigeonholed into short-term thinking, you forget that a great brand should have intention, and a declaration of what they are. And if you don't use that in, something as singular as a content campaign, then what is the brand for? And I think that's where a lot of organizations get in trouble. They see things as so siloed and so short-term. But if they would just step back and look at what equity do we have? And it doesn't mean you have to use 100% of that equity. It just it could be a little kernel of it. And again, I think I always use the Haribo example is because we invented a lot of things for Haribo that were just so much bigger than what they expected to get. But I think that comes from that sort of intentional thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually, when you were saying that, it brought me back to the example that you gave with the Chipotle and the, if they run out of the protein, the sign that they use. Somewhere along the line, I heard this, you stand for something or you stand for nothing. And it's also sounding like a company that's on that whole brand track. It's like every single thing they do has that essence of what they stand for comes through. And again, you stand for something more than simply moving product or simply entertaining people. There's something else there.
Well, and it's, it's kind of that debate. I think, I don't know that it's a real debate, but it is, it's probably taking that idea of purpose a step further. So it's real easy to say purpose is just what is your why above making profit? Well, I can say, well, my why is I want to have fun, and that's not making profit. Now that's great for some brands, but even a brand, I've been talking to Mike Cesario. He's in the whole brand report from Liquid Death. And, Mike is a former advertising creative. Yeah. And what is really great is he knew he wanted to start a company. He didn't know what kind of company he was going to start. Very similar to Eric Ryan that started Method, who's also in the report. And he's a former agency strategist. I love seeing how former agency people tackle brands. They're fascinating to learn from. But, Mike sort of looked at that and just said, we can have fun, but do some good at the same time. So Liquid Death is really interesting because it's actually getting more kids to drink water. And the only reason that they're in Whole Foods is because they're in an aluminum can. If you can believe that.
Yeah.
No one had cracked the code on Whole Foods. Everybody was still using plastic, and Whole Foods loved Liquid Death mainly because they were in an aluminum can.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It had nothing to do with their marketing because they're very radical in a Whole Foods to see a Liquid Death can.
Totally.
You can do both, And so when it comes to purpose, I think that idea of, I think we're at the point now where purpose and impact, purpose and sustainability need to be hand in hand. And that's very different than just having a why, if you will.
Absolutely. Such a great point. As funny as you're saying that, I'm having this flashback of walking through the Whole Food aisle the first time I saw Liquid Death, and I was like, wait, what is happening here? So I'm glad you explained that.
Well, and I was talking to Mike because I wanted to know how did he, I asked him, what was the big, what was the big transformation in your company? And he said, when Whole Foods took us, when Whole Foods decided to carry them. And I said, well, Whole Foods, he said, yeah, and the only reason they took us was because of the aluminum can. But he said, once Whole Foods took us, everybody took us. So Whole Foods checked that box, which is really, I think, great news for the world in many ways, that Whole Foods bringing you in actually gets Walmart to bring you in, gets Target to bring you in. But they weren't in those bigger stores until Whole Foods brought them in, which I think is a really great point.
It totally.
Yeah.
Is.
But so I love, cool. Yeah, I do love seeing that can in between all this genteel, these fresh vegetables and fruits, and then there's totally. Liquid Death, it's great.
They've come out with so many different things too. So it's not just what like the way that they've come out and marketed the brand and even like the way the boxes look on the shelf and everything. It definitely stands out, I have to say.
No, and it's fun, and he's getting a lot of competition, but they've had some great growth, and also maybe not every brand can do this, but they sell a lot of merchandise,
Oh, yeah.
which is, I mean, it's a staggering amount, the dollar amount of merchandise they sell, which is great.
Yeah. It makes so much sense. So also, it's this phenomenon of like kind of like going beyond, transcending your own product, right? Your own initial. So yeah, so that's awesome. It's such a great story.
Well, one of the things you just hit that I would love to say is that I really love brands that, and Mike says this too, and I've always said this is a real high bar. If you can make your marketing either a benefit of the product or you're marketing a product in and of itself, that's pretty powerful. So
Yeah.
very few brands do that, but when you're marketing, if you're when your content and your advertising actually becomes a product of the brand, meaning people seek it out, I think that's really powerful. So I think Liquid Death is doing that. I think Nike, in to some extent, has always done that. And a new brand that I really am starting to write a lot about is Tracksmith. I don't know if you know Tracksmith. It's a
No, I
really
don't.
interesting brand. Yeah, they're doing really well, but it's a running brand, but it has a very particular slant. It's all about old school New England running. There's things they don't, they're never going to be confused with Nike or New Balance or, but they have a really particular slant, and their content and their advertising, it's hard to tell the difference between the two, because they might just film a workout session, but they get Malcolm Gladwell to narrate it,
Oh,
and it's
wow. Yeah.
compelling. And Malcolm Gladwell's a big track head and running person. So Tracksmith is an interesting brand to learn from. It's very
Okay.
holistic.
Yeah.
I really like it as a model.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I wrote it down. I'm gonna, that'll be my new brand I stock.
No, it's cool. There's a lot of learnings. Forbes did a really great article. I'm going to feature them, I think, in one of our newsletters coming up. But yeah, it's a really cool one to study.
Nice. Nice. So one thing, we've talked so much about the company and the brand, your whole brand project, and I'm so glad we did. But I also want to get to your own evolution as it relates to this like a passion for purpose and impact. And I'm curious if there was a moment or a person or something that helped you to one kind of lean more into that desire to work in that purpose and impact space, and to lead brands and people in that space.
It's a great question. I go back. It's interesting. I had a pretty profound moment very early in my career. I had a great mentor, and he probably would have never said I'm a mentor, but he was a great mentor. And at a very early point in my career, he approached me with this idea about communication for good, and this idea that you can actually use the things that we do. And in those days, I was really very focused on marketing and communications and content. But he was the first one that really approached me and said, we can use these tools and these skills for good. And so this will really date me, but we did a project with a group called Band the Box. And back in those days, CDs were the main source of music, but they used to come in these gigantic cardboard boxes. People don't remember. But the whole idea was, we've got to get rid of that cardboard. So we did this campaign and to get rid of the cardboard, and then ultimately CDs, they got rid of the cardboard, and it was really kind of powerful. But that really whet my appetite for the idea of the power of communication to actually make change. And I never lost sort of the passion for that, but it also, is kind of a warning to anybody that gets bitten by that bug. It can be very frustrating when you're in this business. But I've always had a sense of that in everything that I do, whether it's volunteer work or looking for that opportunity. But kind of fast forward, I would say, to a lot of our own internal people that lead our purpose and sustainability group here, they had really been pushing towards the idea of sustainability and purpose. And I didn't really, honestly, I have been educated a lot by my own team. And it didn't take much. And a lot of that team is the one that drove our B Corp certification, but nobody's been a bigger champion of that. We have someone on our team that worked for Ben & Jerry's for a number of years and worked at Unilever with their sustainability brands for a number of years. And so we've trained that entire team. They've taken the Cambridge courses. We're big partners with sustainable brands. We do a lot on it, and B Corp and the B Lab, of course, but that, to me, was a big part of it. And then I also started teaching a class called Design for Good. And I've been very influenced by designers like Bruce Mau, and then a designer and a writer that is, if your audience doesn't know, they should know, a man named Alan Moore. And he's written two really excellent books, one called Do Design.
Okay.
And Do Build. And they're part of a Do lecture series. There's some really great books under that DO Do umbrella. But he has written these beautiful books about how a business can be beautiful. And I think between Bruce Mau's thoughts on business and Alan Moore's, that's really, probably more so Alan Moore, that's really, really opened me up. To kind of taking a lot of the thinking that I had, but finding a much higher way to think about it. Not a righteous way at all, but just, boy, like I said, be careful what you wish for, because once you set that bar high, your days can get very frustrating, but hopefully you're on the right path.
Yeah.
I think you're in that same sort of space. It's just, there's a lot of work to be done. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. But I'm glad, as we're wrapping this up, I have a couple of last things I want to ask you. And the first is just, you actually reminded me of it just now when you used the word frustrated. So this is a little tangential to that, but there's so much heaviness in the world right now, not right now, but just ongoing. And so when we're in this space of purpose and impact, sometimes it can feel frustrating. And sometimes I just say, from my own experience with what I'm doing with SLG Impact and the podcast, sometimes I have moments where I'm like, I'll have a period of frustration, and it's more because I don't know if it's cracking through and if it's actually making a difference. And, and then I can feel a bit disillusioned. And so I'm curious, with all that's going on in the world, like, do you sometimes feel a bit, disillusioned, or does it actually make you even more committed to what you're doing? How do you handle that? And I referenced North Star a minute ago, but it's also like, how do you maintain that North Star when so much that we're seeing in the world isn't actually the good stuff right now?
Well, Shauna, you've taken this into quite a different direction.
Sorry.
No, I love it. I love it.
I completely took an exit off the highway.
No, but I think in many ways, when we talk about, I don't mean to relate it to whole brand, but I do think it's interesting because I don't think you can do any, I don't think we can have any of these conversations in a vacuum or in isolation without getting down to that individual level. And it's a tough question, and it is tough, but someone close to me gave me such a great piece of advice a couple of weeks ago, and they didn't even know they were saying it. We were just having this conversation, and it came out, and I was like, would you please repeat that? Because that was so helpful. And I haven't stopped thinking about it. And you sort of said North Star. And she said, use your own belief system to nurture yourself. And it just stopped me in my tracks. And I thought, you know, that is such a profound piece of advice to keep you on track when times get tough, and then day to day. And, you know, again, the hard part is making sure you feel fairly confident about your belief system. Now, you know, that doesn't always happen. It's not necessarily an age thing, but it might be a maturity thing. I've had a lot of time to work on it, but again, it's not an age thing. I do think it's a maturity thing, but I think that idea of having your own North Star and using that as something to come back to is really helpful. And then I just saw this, and I think it was even, might've even been yesterday. Someone was talking about one of their favorite teachers. And I can't remember what the topic was, but the teacher walked into the room, didn't say a word, and just went to the chalkboard and basically said, wrote on the chalkboard, very few of us will have the chance to run into a burning building and save a baby and run out. But every single day, we can find a little moment of kindness in our daily actions. And I just thought that was so helpful, because I think a lot of times we just think we're here to solve these gigantic problems all the time. And we can get very, you know, we can get very worn down by that. But if we just start chipping away at the smaller stuff while we're getting there, you know, and take stock at the end of the day and go, all right, how did I do today?
It's so true. It's so true. We don't have to boil the ocean in one day. I love that, of like the chipping away, and something that a little phrase that I remind myself of, is that quite simply, I'm either part of the solution or I'm part of the problem. And so then that helps me to know that it might be a small, it doesn't matter how small it is, it's not insignificant if the intention's there, and so, you know, who am I to judge really like what the impact is? I don't actually know, but again, it's the intention, and it's that steady path, that steady commitment to that impact and the evolution. But again, I think we all need when we're practicing in this space, we all need these little phrases, these little things to gravitate toward. I have something on my desk, and I've referenced it many times on this show. It's just a little piece of paper that reads, do something that means something. So again, it's like sometimes, and I share this with the audience on this show, because again, it's like, I'm trying to share and learn from, you know, guests, like what are these little things that can help us, you know, continue?
No, and I love it. I love it. And I think they are. And again, I wouldn't share 1,000 of them, because I don't have 1,000 of them. But I when they work, they work. And I think the trick is, and this is, you know, like I said, I've been teaching this class called Design for Good. Good is a tricky word, right? Like, because you have to define it. And so this idea of nurture yourself with your own belief system,
I love that.
I think defining that belief system is, to me, the trick. And you had asked a few minutes ago about purpose and sustainability. I just love that I'm growing and I'm learning so much. And all of that is raising the bar on what I think, you know, is where there is. But I think that's what we have to do. Like, what is good? You know, if you say something's good, what do you mean by that?
Right.
You know, and I think I love the debate between sustainability and regeneration. You know, someone said to me, sustainability is doing less evil and regeneration is adding good. And I'm like, well, I kind of know what side of that equation I want to be on.
Yeah.
I want to add good. I don't want to just do less bad.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and you know, one more thing, if you wouldn't mind, this same person gave me another piece of advice, and she said, start behaving today like all these things you want to do have already happened.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I don't know that was very helpful. So when if I behave like everything's doom and gloom, I'm going to be doom and gloom. So how will I behave when all the things I want to get done or all the things I want to see are already happening? So when they do happen, I hit the ground running. I don't have to rev back up and go, oh my God, my life just changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a great piece of advice.
Oh, these are such great ones. This is so, and I think like just this entire conversation today, it's truly a great example of the way of a person and a company that is, again, doing the things that what I'm trying to do, this brand of SLG Impact, what it's standing for. And again, it's like that commitment to evolution, ourselves, of people, of brands, and again, of that impact. And so, you know, hopefully folks who are have been listening or watching, they get a bit of fueled by this, and they have plenty of tips and sayings to help continue the journey. So again, thank you enough, Tim, for being here today, for the conversation. And I look so forward to continuing to follow the whole brand project. And I'm hoping that you're going to do a 2023 report.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we're already starting on it. Shauna, thanks so much for the invitation. You'll have to give me a couple hours to ask you a bunch of great questions.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye, everybody. Have an awesome day.